The new Woody Allen film, Midnight in Paris, tells the time-bending story of Gil, a Hollywood screenwriter and would-be novelist played by Owen Wilson, who takes a pre-wedding trip to Paris with his fabulously wealthy fiancée, played by Rachel McAdams.
I mean, this is unbelievable. There's no city like this in the world.
You're in love with a fantasy.
I'm in love with you.
But Gil's girlfriend is a cold fish, and he's actually yearning for the cold water flats and back alley salons of the Paris of the 1920s, Hemingway's Paris. And one night, he's magically transported there. Suddenly, he's partying with Hemingway and Picasso and F. Scott and Zelda Fitzgerald and Dolly and Cole Porter and Gertrude Stein and Man Ray. And he knows exactly what to say to each of them. He tells filmmaker Louis Buñuel that he ought to make a film about people unable to leave a dinner party. In the screening I saw, moviegoers got a big laugh out of that one, because years later in real life, Buñuel would make two films about dinner parties, The Exterminating Angel and The Discreet Charm of the Bourgeoisie. But what if you didn't know that? Or wondered, who's that guy Belmont with Hemingway? Why the excitement when Gil spots Juna Barnes? Enter Joseph Berger of the New York Times, author of the recent article Decoding Woody Allen's Midnight in Paris. He joins us from the NPR studios in New York to do just that. And Joseph, we now know that Juan Belmont was a top matador of the day. But remind us, who was Juna Barnes?
Juna Barnes was a writer who came from New York, hung around Greenwich Village for many years, then moved to Paris and almost immediately interviewed James Joyce for a newspaper article. Hmm. She was known as an experimental novelist, and she wrote a book called Nightwood.
And so Gil spots her, and wow, there's Juna Barnes. And you remind us, including her, Woody Allen had a lot of characters to choose from in Paris in the 1920s.
At one point, there was something like 250 writers and American writers and artists in Paris. Hmm. Paris was cheap. There was something about the connection between the franc and the dollar that made the dollar go very, very far. So even poor writers like Hemingway could live there.
Well, and Corey Stoll plays him hilariously. Let's stay on Hemingway for just a second. You say he was poor. Who was he at this point in his life? He speaks to Gil of Paris as a movable feast. That got a big chuckle because he hadn't even written the memoir of the same title yet. So who was he at this point? What had he written?
He had written a group of highly regarded short stories, including one which he showed to Gertrude Stein called Up in Michigan. And he still hadn't written his first great novel, The Sun Also Rises. He wrote it in Paris. He showed the galleys to Fitzgerald, and Fitzgerald was bowled over, as was Hemingway by Fitzgerald's The Great Gatsby, which had already been published. Hemingway came away saying, "When I had finished the book, I knew that no matter what Scott did nor how he behaved, I must know it was like a sickness and be of any help I could to him and try to be a good friend."
Well, that explains some of the tension that we feel in some of the scenes when Hemingway is sort of bad-mouthing F. Scott Fitzgerald's great love, Zelda.
Well, Hemingway was a famous stickler for doing things well and right. So when he meets a totally chaotic character like Zelda, he has instant repugnance toward her.
I have to say, some would say Hemingway's view of the Fitzgeralds is a little of the pot calling the kettle black because of his whole life, but you're talking about discipline when it comes to your art.
Yes.
Let's move to another character. Adriana, played by Marianne Cotillard. She's purported to be the stunning young mistress of Picasso. In this scene, she and Gil are attracted to each other.
Well, you certainly understand why all these guys want to paint you, because you have just about one of the best faces ever. I mean, it's so interesting.
Oh.
You know, it's just...
You're interesting, too, in a lost way.
Lost? Oh, well, I guess I am lost.
I guess you are. Joseph Berger, who is Adriana? Is she real?
I don't think so. Picasso, who did have a number of mistresses, his mistresses were relatively constant. One was Marie-Therese Walter, who was 17 when she met Picasso, but she stayed with him for 8 years. And then there was Dora Maar, who was his lover for 8 years as well. Adriana is this, she flits about. She tells Gil she was the lover of Modigliani and Braque. There was nobody named Adriana.
Yeah.
And the other characters actually bear the names. You know, Hemingway is called Hemingway, and right. Dolly's called Dolly. You know?
Well, Gertrude Stein was very real. She was the sister of art collector Leo Stein. Her companion was Alice B. Toklas, who answers the door when Gil arrives at their salon, makes a little cameo there. We watch Gertrude Stein, played by Kathy Bates, counseling everyone, including Picasso, when Adriana runs away with Hemingway. Other characters, Gil sits down at a table with the filmmaker Buñuel, Salvador Dali, and Man Ray. Man Ray, remind us.
He was one of the early advocates of the anarchic Dada movement as well as surrealism. He was a photographer and an artist, and in the film, he's the subject of maybe the film's funniest line, because Gil tells Man Ray, you know, that he's a visitor from the year 2010. Man Ray is kind of enchanted with that idea. So Gil says to him, "That's easy for you to say, because you're a surrealist. I'm just a normal guy."
At another point, the taxi drives by to pick him up, and the door swings open, and hi, it's Tom Elliott. And he says, "T.S. Elliott, I love Proof Rock." You know, just he knows who each of these characters are. Do you think, though, that people ought to brush up on them if they feel maybe they don't before they go?
It can't hurt, but, you know, a lot of this is in the popular domain already. I mean, we know that Fitzgerald and Hemingway were in Paris. We know Cole Porter lived in Paris and wrote many songs about, you know, like I Left Paris and C'est Magnifique.
When love comes in and takes you for a spin, ooh la la la, c'est magnifique. When every night your loved one holds you tight, ooh la la la, c'est magnifique.
Even if you aren't that familiar with some of the characters, like Juna Barnes, for example, who's a little more obscure, you'll get a lot of the movie without it. And you get the idea of the movie. And without giving too much away, you know, the idea of the movie is how we long to live in other periods. And, you know, I think Woody Allen makes us contemplate what that means.
Well, we can say this much, I think, that Adriana, the mistress of Picasso, is yearning for an even earlier time.
For me, La Belle Époque Paris would have been perfect.
Really?
Yes.
Better than now?
You know, the whole sensibility, the street lamps, the kiosks, the horse and carriages.
Suddenly, they're transported to the Moulin Rouge with Toulouse-Lautrec and Gauguin. Those guys are pining for the Renaissance. So,
right.
Nobody's happy.
But, you know, the 1920s, I've got to say, because I was thinking about it, it's hard to come up with another period that was as fertile and as productive and as where there were so many talented people gathered in one spot. I mean, you know, think of the people that are almost entirely left out of the film. Like James Joyce was there, you know. I mean, he doesn't make an appearance in the film. The expatriate scene, the bohemian scene in Paris, just the sheer number and the sheer number of really talented people is kind of breathtaking.
That's Joseph Berger. We'll link you to his article, Decoding Woody Allen's Midnight in Paris. Joseph, thank you.
Thank you for having me on. It's a film I enjoy talking about, so I appreciate your asking me.
I love Paris in the springtime.